How come nobody's ever tried to be a superhero?
Well, I don't know. Probably because it's impossible.
Putting on a mask and helping people? How's that impossible?
Dude, if anybody did it in real life, they'd get their ass kicked.
Oh, no, I'm just standing around, you know. No, I'm not.
I was just a regular guy.
Hey, gorgeous.
Hey, my only superpower was being invisible to girls.
The comic books had it wrong. You don't need a power to be a superhero.
Leave him alone! It's none of your business!
Yes, it is.
Hey, there's a dude dressed like a superhero out there fighting a bunch of guys.
Who are you? I'm Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass has become the latest internet phenomenon.
This is awesome.
He's actually pretty good.
He should call himself Ass Kick instead.
He's inspired a wave of real-life superheroes.
Tool up, honey bunny.
It's time to get bad guys.
You want to go fight some crime?
Let's see what you can do.
This guy comes out of nowhere.
This would be the guy that looks like Batman.
You're telling me one guy killed eight of my men tonight?
I gotta send a public service message that being a superhero is bad for your health.
So you wanna play?
Who are you?
I'm Hit Girl. And that's Big Daddy.
Kick ass. Red mist.
Oh, that kinda hurt. I think I'm in love with her, dude.
I want this place locked down. Nobody comes in, nobody goes out.
As a little kid.
Bring it on!
Oh, yeah. Didn't see that, did you?
That's right, we're superheroes. You love us.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me, as always, on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriscio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I am doing just well. How are you today?
I am good. I'm pretty good, actually, because we're about to talk about a movie that I was incredibly hyped for when it was first released, Mike. I
almost find that so impossible, and that's a lie, because this is made specifically for you, this movie.
Yeah, I was in this movie's exact target audience. It was a deconstructionist, vulgar, hyper-violent action comedy take on superheroes starring Nicolas Cage. You better believe I was doing everything I could to be prepared for 2010's Kick-Ass. Now, Mike, this movie is based on a comic by Mark Millar, whose work has also been adapted into movies like Wanted and Kingsman. He also wrote Civil War, the Marvel comic, and he got mentioned in the credits for Captain America Civil War as kind of being based on his property. So there was that as well.
You know, good for that guy.
Yeah, definitely. He was a big name in comics in the late 2000s. And what's kind of fascinating about Kick-Ass is that the comic and the film were actually being made pretty much at the same time. Kick-Ass as a comic was 8 issues, and it ran from, I think, 2008 to 2010. And the movie rights were sold before the first issue was even published.
Wow.
Yeah. Millar actually worked with screenwriters Matthew Vaughn and Jane Goldman throughout the process, so the comic informed the movie and vice versa. There's a great quote from Millar on the movie's Wikipedia page that is hilarious in hindsight, which reads, "With Kick-Ass, the book's just out, and now the movie's out 6 weeks later. And I think that's the way things are going to go now, because to go to Marvel's B and C-list characters and try to get movies out of them, what's the point of that?"
Oh, man.
2010 was a different time, Mike.
But Iron Man was already out already. How do you...
Iron Man had come out. Iron Man was a pretty big hit, but nothing, like who knew what was going to happen? Like, nobody knew there was going to be a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Like, nobody knew Ant-Man was going to be a big hit. Like, these...
That's true.
Like, we're at a point where we're making Doctor Strange movies and they're successful. It's nuts, man. I just saw Iron Man team up with Doctor Strange and the Guardians of the Galaxy in outer space. It was wild.
Yeah, we're still holding out hope for the... Oh, no, wait, this is the wrong podcast. Never mind.
What were you going to say?
Make a Black Cat Silver Sable joke.
Yeah, I'm sure there's no audience overlap between these two podcasts. So
no,
nobody
definitely
would get
not.
That. Anyway, Matthew Vaughn, who also directed the movie, had a hell of a time getting this movie actually made. No studio wanted to touch Kick-Ass because of the extremely graphic nature of the comic book. Some studios expressed interest if they could make some of the characters older, specifically Hit Girl. They were not comfortable with the concept of an 11-year-old who was swearing and just destroying people left and right. Studio execs felt it would be less offensive if Hit Girl were a teenager or an adult. Screenwriter Jane Goldman felt the opposite, saying it would actually be more offensive because then Hit Girl would probably be sexualized if she was portrayed as a teenager, and she was very adamant that Hit Girl was not. I think that's probably a fair assessment. Yeah. Considering the way we've seen like Harley Quinn treated in like movies recently, like it makes sense. So Matthew Vaughn actually ended up raising the money to make Kick-Ass on his own, like by himself. Yeah, and it ended up with a budget of roughly $30 million. And these were the days before Kickstarter, so that's actually pretty impressive. On set, Matthew Vaughn called it the most expensive home movie I ever made, because he was not sure if this would actually get released. Ultimately, he was able to sell the film to Universal for more than he originally asked them for, and the movie really put a lot of people on the map in a big way. First, Matthew Vaughn, who immediately got attached to make X-Men First Class when this came out, and then Aaron Johnson, who went on to star in Godzilla and Avengers Age of Ultron, and of course the film's breakout star, Chloe Moretz, as Hit Girl. Now, like I said before, I was the exact target audience for this movie. I was 16 years old. I loved superheroes, comic books, hyperviolent movies, excessive swearing, and of course Nicolas Cage. I read the comic before I saw the movie. I remember being incredibly upset that I couldn't go opening night, and a bunch of my friends went without me. And I was the one who had been hyping the movie up for them. They didn't even know what Kick-Ass was a week before it came out. Those ungrateful bastards.
You need better friends, past Mike.
Exactly. I ended up seeing it in its second weekend, but that posed a new challenge, Mike, because this movie was rated R. And my theater checked IDs, and I was 16. So I did what I always did at the time. I bought a ticket to a different movie, and I snuck in. I ended up doing it again the following weekend. I saw Kick-Ass twice in theaters. All I'm saying, that little bump that How to Train Your Dragon got later in its box office run, like, that's thanks to me.
It's the Mike Smith bump.
Yeah, it's the Mike Smith bump. I honestly think, How to Train Your Dragon did okay in its first weekend, and it ended up getting like a lot of legs. Like, it ended up being a pretty big hit because like it just stayed in the top three at the box office for a while. I remember like 6 weeks after it came out, it went back to number one, and I really think it's Kick-Ass's fault. Like, I really think it's 16-year-olds like me who are buying tickets to How to Train Your Dragon and then sneaking into Kick-Ass. I really think that was what happened.
That's definitely what it was.
Because it was an R-rated movie that was mainly targeted at kids who were too young to actually pay to see the movie because they were buying tickets to How to Train Your Dragon and sneaking in, Kick-Ass did not do too well at the box office. Yeah, it made like triple its budget with a worldwide gross of about $96 million. But for a superhero movie, it was expected to do a lot better, even with the R rating. In America, it did very poorly. It was considered a flop, and yet for some reason, we still ended up getting Kick-Ass 2 in 2013, which made even less money. Like, that movie had the same budget and made $60 million. So it actually made, like, a significant chunk less than what the original Kick-Ass made. So I'm just saying, don't expect Kick-Ass 3 anytime soon, basically.
Although, like, now's kind of the perfect time for Kick-Ass 3.
It does feel like it was a little before its time, Kick-Ass, almost. Yeah. And I feel like, especially now that Deadpool proved to be a huge success, while basically just being a Kick-Ass ripoff, yeah, I said it.
Shut your damn mouth.
This is the time. You know, now that Deadpool has proven that R-rated superhero comedies can work, Kick-Ass 3 or whatever, it could be a thing. You never know. Yeah. So Nicolas Cage is in this movie playing a supporting role as a Damon McReady, a.k.a. Big Daddy. The movie's main character, Dave Wazowski, a.k.a. Kick-Ass, is played by Aaron Taylor Johnson. Back then, just Aaron Johnson. Yeah, and Chloe Moretz is here as Mindy McReady, a.k.a. Hit Girl. Now, Moretz had just appeared in 500 Days of Summer, but this was the first thing I saw her in, and she absolutely stole the movie then, and she does now, I think, anyway. And since Kick-Ass, she's been in movies like Hugo, the remake of Carrie, and Neighbors 2, of course. Neighbors 2 is great, Mike. Don't front.
Okay, fair.
Christopher Mintz-Plasse, who will spend his entire life known solely as McLovin from Superbad, plays Chris D'Amico / Red Mist. And frequent Matthew Vaughn collaborator Mark Strong plays the villain Frank D'Amico. And this was at a time when Mark Strong was the bad guy in everything.
Yeah.
Around this time, Ridley Scott's Robin Hood came out. He was the bad guy in that. And the next year, he was the bad guy in Green Lantern, 2011. And then you've got Dave's love interest, Katie Duma, played by Lindsay Fonseca, who I think a lot of people will recognize as Ted's daughter on the couch for all 9 seasons of How I Met Your Mother. She was also delightful in Agent Carter, and she appeared in Hot Tub Time Machine the same year as Kick-Ass, actually, like a couple weeks earlier, I think.
Big year for her.
Big year, big year. Also appearing in both Hot Tub Time Machine and this is Clark Duke, who plays Dave's friend Marty. And then Dave's other friend Todd is played by Evan Peters, who, A, like, I missed, like, I only knew Evan Peters as the friend from Kick-Ass for a long time. I had no idea he was on American. I had no idea he was on American Horror Story for a long time. And then suddenly, like, I looked online one day, and, like, people were just all over. Like, he was the big thing for a little while on Tumblr and things like that. It was weird.
Yeah.
It's also now kind of weird that both Quicksilvers are best friends in this movie.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Aaron Johnson, of course, was Quicksilver in Avengers, and Evan Peters plays Quicksilver in X-Men. They're both in this movie.
That's the best thing ever.
Super weird, right?
Holy shit.
And then you've got Michael Rispoli playing Frank's guy Big Joe, and he also appeared in Leaving Las Vegas and Snake Eyes, so there's a Cage triple reunion for you. And then a couple of Guy Ritchie and Matthew Vaughn regulars, like Dexter Fletcher and Jason Fleming, pop up in the movie, plus Xander Berkeley is there for a scene as Detective Gigante. He's on The Walking Dead now, but he also appeared in Leaving Las Vegas and The Rock, another triple reunion right there. And then you've got Yancey Butler, the girl from Hard Target with Jean-Claude Van Damme, playing Angie D'Amico, and Craig Ferguson appears as himself for a brief bit, which was pretty cool. And it was so good just to see him again and just to hear the words, "It's a great day for America, everybody!" And all that. Like, that was great. I miss
for him to pat the camera. Loving
exactly.
It.
I missed that a lot. And finally, this one's weird. Playing Dave's mom is none other than Elizabeth McGovern, who was recently in the cast of Downton Abbey. She was the female lead in a very early Cage movie, Racing with the Moon.
Wow.
She was Sean Penn's love interest in that movie. She plays Dave's mom in this movie, which means she's in it for 3 seconds and has no lines.
Yeah. Oh, my
like,
God.
Like, it's bizarre they got Elizabeth McGovern. She's a very, like, she was a big actress. Like, she was talented and stuff. So, very weird there. Kick-Ass was written and directed by Matthew Vaughn, along with his frequent writing partner, Jane Goldman. His previous movie was 2007's Stardust, and his next would be 2011's X-Men First Class. Most recently, of course, he directed 2017's Kingsman: The Golden Circle, which we reviewed on Film Bookcast, in case you want to check that out. And we reviewed the first Kingsman on Film Bookcast as well, too. So, we've talked about Matthew Vaughn movies a lot on
yeah, we
our
have.
Podcast collectively. And if you, like most people, were not seeing Kick-Ass in theaters on April 16th, 2010, it's possible that you lived in a city that was showing Exit Through the Gift Shop, the incredible documentary about street art directed by Banksy. More likely, though, you would be seeing the only other wide release that weekend, which was the remake of Death at a Funeral with Martin Lawrence and Chris Rock. That movie was actually directed by former Cage director Neil LaBute, who made The Wicker Man.
Look at that.
So
it's just like a whole lot of Cage happening.
Exactly, man. And that's really what Kick-Ass is all about. The IMDb plot synopsis for... I copy and paste my previous episodes.
Oh, God.
So the IMDb plot synopsis for Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans reads...
we're such professionals, Mike.
Dave Lazowski is an unnoticed high school student and comic book fan who one day decides to become a superhero, even though he has no powers, training, or meaningful reason to do so.
Wow, that's a really dark...
I like that, though, because I like that last sentence really, like, that last bit of the plot synopsis, like, it's right.
Yeah.
It's correct. So, Mike, I mean, I'll talk about how I felt about the movie today in a second, but what were your overall thoughts on Kick-Ass? I'm assuming you had seen it before.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I had seen it probably a few times. I never really remembered a whole lot about it. Okay. I didn't have the same kind of emotional backstory or relationship with this movie as you did.
Right.
But that said, I had a lot of fun with Kick-Ass. It seems, like we were talking about before, it seems so much more poignant now in this Marvel-dominated world, like just about superhero movies and about these kinds of things, for Kick-Ass to man, this I think this movie was like 3 or 4 years too early.
Yeah, I think so.
And it would have crushed it. And it's fun. It's got all the insane Matthew Vaughn action, you know, hyper violence, crazy editing stuff that I love. You know, between these and like Guy Ritchie movies. There's one scene in particular that I guess I'll talk about later that I was like, oh, this is from Kingsman, basically, which was great. And it, you know, it was a little – there's a few touch-and-go moments where I was like, oh, man, we're in some dangerous territory. But I think it manages to skirt that line and not go into incredibly offensive areas. Right. But it's still goofy and fun, and it's got Nick Cage doing – maybe I think one of my favorite performances in his later career.
Mid-career, I mean, maybe.
I don't know how you want to define later career.
Yeah, I think Cage is flat out fantastic in this movie. But yeah, I think it's interesting that you mentioned dangerous territory that this movie kind of straddles. Because I think that's something that happens a lot with the work of Mark Millar in particular. Like, that's kind of almost the entire point of the original comic, is just to be as edgy as possible. Yeah. And that's something that he does in a lot of his stuff. And the Kingsman movies are like that too. I think Matthew Vaughn does a pretty good job of, you know, having that edginess and like that aspect of the property there, but also tempering it in such a way that it sort of feels meaningful. And I think that he's more successful in that way in Kingsman. In this, it is a little touch and go, like you were saying. So, like I was saying, I really liked this movie a lot when it was released. I mean, I saw it twice in theaters. I read the comic. I had a big ass Red Mist poster hanging in my room. This was the first Blu-ray I ever purchased. I own this movie
Mother
on Blu-ray.
Mother of God.
Yeah. So I saw it a lot in like 2010, 2011. I hadn't really watched the movie probably since then. The last time I can remember watching it is my freshman year of college. And the reason I remember it is because I ended up making out with a girl that night that my friend was trying to get with all night. It was hilarious.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
So I'm going to say that was early 2012. And yeah, I still like a lot of this movie. I think there's a lot of this movie that's really, really good. I don't think it has aged particularly well, like you were saying before with some of the aspects of it. I think the edginess feels a little more phony this time around, now that I'm older. Its geekiness feels a lot more like pandering to me. And it sort of ditches its concept halfway through. The idea of what if someone tried to be a superhero in the real world is a good one. But then when you abandon all pretense of this being the real world, it loses some of its impact. You know, once it starts to be like jetpacks and bazookas and stuff like that, it's like, okay,
all right,
we're out of the realm of the real world now. But that's like a gradual thing, though. So I think it ultimately works. I was really what bothered me this time. I was a lot more bothered this time around by the relationship between Dave and Katie.
Yes.
Which never bothers to treat Katie with respect and makes her feel like such a passive character. So, like, in the subplot here is that, you know, Dave likes this girl, Katie Duma, and then throughout, there's a rumor going around that Dave is gay, and so she kind of latches onto him as a gay best friend, and he pretends to be gay to get closer to her.
It's all of like, 2010, we don't know how to handle this material yet.
Yeah. And their relationship is genuinely one that's, I think, incredibly creepy on Dave's part. And it's bad, and, you know, when he reveals to her that he isn't gay, like, she should be furious, and she is for, like, a second.
Then he says, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then they have sex, and they are dating, and, like, they're madly in love. And, yeah, it doesn't make Katie seem like a great character. Like, the way they get together is reprehensible, I think. And the movie, like, never subverts or calls Dave out on that. And I think that would be like, if it had, like, really confronted what Dave was doing, I think that would be more interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, because it's different from how it is in the comic. I haven't read the comic since before the movie came out. But in the comic, they don't end up together. It's actually, yeah. So in the comic, you know, that subplot is there. Like, she thinks he's gay and he's like pretending to be her gay best friend. And then when he reveals to her, like, he doesn't reveal to her that he's kick-ass, but he does reveal to her that he's not gay, and she gets furious and has her boyfriend punch him in the face. And that's how that relationship ends.
That's amazing.
And that's what should happen. Honestly, like, that's,
yeah. Yeah.
Like, for a movie that is subverting superhero tropes and stuff like that, like, that would have been perfect. Like, that would have been great if he didn't end up with the girl at the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's the difference between this kind of storyline in Kick-Ass versus what goes on in Kingsman, which is, you know, like the suave. In Kingsman, it's the skewering of the James Bond sleeps with every woman character, right? And that's, like, the point. Whereas this storyline doesn't really have anything to do with superhero movies and the satire therein.
No.
It feels real weird and out of place.
Yeah, it's kind of gross. But here's the thing. What does work in this movie, and I think a lot of other things do, I think they work super well. Anytime this movie focuses on Nicolas Cage and Chloe Moretz, it's A+. So just across the board, I love everything with those characters. They are incredible in this movie together. And I think a big reason Kick-Ass 2 was kind of a letdown is that Cage isn't in it. Like, that's the thing. We won't end up talking Kick-Ass 2 on this podcast because Nicolas Cage is not in it. I think he appears in a photo at some point, but that doesn't count. We're not
going to judge the performance.
We're not going to judge the performance of a sheet of paper with Nicolas Cage's face on.
Yeah, I mean, I've never even seen Kick-Ass 2.
I have seen Kick-Ass 2 exactly once, and I barely remember it. I know Jim Carrey is in it.
Yeah,
but
I remember that.
But not enough of it. I remember he's like they really hyped up his role in the movie, and he really wasn't in that much of it. I think I remember a scene where Hit Girl goes to school and sets off like a chain reaction of vomiting, and that's
sure.
like
I mean, it's like the head exploding scene in Kingsman.
Yeah, but not as artfully done.
But not, I guess, not great.
Yeah, not amazing. I mean, Matthew Vaughn didn't do Kick-Ass 2. That was Jeff Wadlow, who recently had a movie in theaters called Truth or Dare, which I haven't seen, but I've heard is terrible. So there's right. that.
Sounds enough.
Yeah, but I remember watching Kick-Ass 2, and the first action scene started with Hit Girl, and as soon as it started, I was like, wow, yeah, you can tell Matthew Vaughn's not part of this anymore. Because the action scenes in Kick-Ass are uniformly pretty great. I mean, Matthew Vaughn is like a very stylish filmmaker. Like he worked with Guy Ritchie for a very long time. He knows how to do a stylish action scene. And the way he shoots action really stands out, I think, in this movie. I think it's only improved over time. I think the first Kingsman is my favorite Matthew Vaughn movie as
that
of right
church,
now.
That church scene, though.
Oh, man, that church scene in Kingsman. Highlight of his career right there.
Yeah.
So I think all the action stuff in this movie is really strong. I also really love the score for this movie. I think the score for this movie is actually really good. And that, like, there's the main theme which plays as Kick-Ass and Hit Girl are jetpacking over the city towards the end. There's that main theme that goes like... stuck in my head since 2010.
Wow. Just all the time, forever.
Yeah. Honestly, like, there are times, like, I like the Avengers theme, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are times when I try to think of the Avengers theme, and that one pops in my head instead. Like, that one has been more of an earworm for me than the theme music that's played for the biggest franchise in the world over the past decade.
Yeah, well, while we're talking about music, there's this very weird personal thing that I have with this movie. And it's takes place in one of my favorite scenes, which is the Big Daddy Warehouse murder fest,
yes.
Where he just kills everyone in there. But the song they play is like the creeping, slow escalation, terrifying song that's used in 28 Days Later. And it's the same exact thing, and it makes it just totally ruins that scene for me in Kick-Ass, because I'm like, this is the 28 Days Later song. But it's so good. Like, that scene is so great, and I love it. And just while we were talking about music, I wanted to bring that up, so I ruined it for other people.
So just distracting for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, and then there's a lot of like funny moments throughout the movie. You know, this movie is very much an action comedy, and that helps. You know, I'm also a big fan of how deep into comics culture this movie is. Like, I think it occasionally feels like pandering, but at the same time, it's like name dropping like Steve Ditko. They reference Scott Pilgrim at one point. Like, these are like throwaway lines of dialogue. Like, people are just kind of referencing these things. Like, and it's, so as somebody who was like very deeply steeped into comics culture in 2010, like, it was just awesome to see like that kind of stuff on screen, especially because like we hadn't really seen most of the Marvel Cinematic Universe up to that point, so we really wouldn't see how comic booky movies would get over the next decade or so. Mm-hmm. And there were comic movies I loved at that point. I mean, I loved Spider-Man 2 and The Dark Knight and all that, but like, you know, I had like I never thought in a million years I would see like Thor and Hulk fight in a gladiatorial ring on, you know, the other side of the universe type thing.
While Jeff Goldblum watches on.
Yeah, exactly. That just never seemed like it was in the realm of possibility. So the fact that this movie was so deeply steeped in comics culture was like, it was pretty cool as like a geeky kid who loved like hearing things that like I loved like referenced on screen. Like, I was a big Kevin Smith fan at that time too, so I love Clerks and all that. As far as the premise of this movie goes, though, that same year James Gunn came out with the movie Super, and that's a much better movie, I think.
Better?
Yeah, I mean, I like this movie a lot. I still like this movie a lot. But Super, I think, really commits to the idea of it being the real world. Have you seen Super?
No, it's tragic. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. Like I hesitate to say that Kick-Ass is the mainstream anything, but Kick-Ass was the mainstream Super. Super got like a very limited release, and Kick-Ass got a wide release at least. But Super starred Rainn Wilson as a guy who, you know, decided like put on a mask and started like picked up a wrench and just started beating the shit out of people and fighting crime. Ellen Page played like his sidekick, and that even that movie has like this really fucked up relationship between Rainn Wilson and Ellen Page, but it also serves what that movie is like doing, and it's much more interesting on that front. And also that movie's just hilarious. Also, I think Super has the best opening credit sequence I've ever seen in a movie. I love the opening credits of Super. I just want to say, like, if you have seen Kick-Ass and you like Kick-Ass, you should watch Super, because Super's great.
All right.
Anyway, let's talk about Nicolas Cage, Mike, because this is a Nicolas Cage podcast. I think he's great.
I agree. Let's move on.
All right. Yeah. But I think his relationship with Hit Girl is the heart of this movie. And I think he and Moretz play off each other so, so well in this movie. And it's like a really weird performance that he's doing. Like,
yeah,
on both ends. Like, when he's not in costume, Cage is playing the dorkiest dad imaginable, which is a great juxtaposition for what he and his daughter talk about. You know, their first scene together, he's talking her through taking a bullet and then he shoots her. And it's amazing. It's so funny. And, you know, he's talking about like these different weapons that she has to, like, what do you want for your birthday? And she wants like this knife. And he's like, oh, good. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, first she says, well, man, I can't remember. It's like a very typical, stereotypical girly thing.
Yeah,
and he just like has this look of horror.
And then he's like, oh, I'm just fucking with you, Daddy. I want like this.
Yeah. The last thing I wanted to bring up is the relationship you have with Chloe and the relationship you have with Jay. It kind of reflects the way off screen these younger performers look up to you because of your history in this business. When you're on set, is there a sense of... How do you create that space for them and let them know, look, anything goes, we can try anything? Because, God, Chloe's fearless in that film.
Yeah. Well, look, we had a really good relationship, you know. As soon as I met Chloe, I knew she was a star, you know. She had so much charisma. She has her own unique sense of humor, making jokes about Lego Maiego commercials. You know? Yeah, I knew right away how confident and how much charisma she has. And we, you know, it was just easy. It was really, we didn't rehearse it too much. We didn't think too much about it. We just were like jazz musicians riffing off of each other, just playing with it. And it was incredibly comfortable. And I really don't think anyone else could have played that part. She owns Hit Girl.
Yeah.
And she makes it work on every level, you know. I think when people see it, even people that denigrate whatever the language and the film, when they see it, they'll be charmed by her performance.
But then when he's in costume as Big Daddy, oh my, it is glorious, Mike. It is so good. And I wish he was in more of the movie as Big Daddy, actually, because I feel like he's not in enough of it. But Cage is just straight up doing an Adam West impression. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. You watch that performance and you think, oh, of course Nicolas Cage is in this movie. Like, there's no way he wouldn't be. You know, somebody who has as deep into comics as Cage is, as we know him to be, whose name comes from Luke Cage, who named his son Kal-El, he would not pass up the chance to pay tribute to Adam West in a Batman ripoff costume. Like, no way.
Of course he's going to do
it. You have such a public history of being a comic fan and being a collector, and over the years you've been very vocal about your love of the medium.
Yeah.
This film feels to me like one of the first great deconstructions of it for adults.
Kick-Ass.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it feels like you're now part of a sort of a cap on comic books. This says a lot about not just comics themselves, but our love of them and what it is we take from them and are inspired by.
Yeah. Well, it's also it's a new telling of a genre that's been very successful, and it shows, I think, that it's a genre that's here to stay, because it shows that you can do other things with it now, and that people will respond, you know. I was a little worried that movies like once Spider-Man and Iron Man and all the great comic characters like Hulk, all the A-list comic characters were done, that you wouldn't be able to do anything else because they were the ones that really mattered, you know. But Kick-Ass shows that you can create new characters in the genre do new things with the format.
So, so you love Nicolas Cage's Adam West impression as well, Mike.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right that his performance, and especially between him and Chloe Moretz, they are the backbone of this movie. Because nobody really cares about Kick-Ass and his struggles a whole lot.
He's fine, but, like, you know, it's whatever. Like, a lot of his stuff is focusing on Katie Duma, and that stuff is not great. So.
And that stuff's really problematic. but, yeah, Cage's performance and just everything about him when he's Big Daddy is just, like, hilarious, just absolutely amazing. Even to the point when we have the scene where he's putting on the makeup,
I love that scene, the
fake mustache parts, like just to make his mustache look longer. Like
that was Cage's idea. Also,
no way, really?
Yeah, Cage's idea. It was his idea that MacReady would have a mustache in the first place, and then as a disguise, he would have those mustache extensions.
That's so good.
Which is fantastic. Yeah, I love that. And I love that scene where he's putting on the costume, because you never see Batman putting on the costume.
Right.
You know what I mean? You never see Batman applying the eyeliner on his face.
Yeah. Yes.
And so to have Cage, like, just like showing him putting the makeup on and stuff, I thought it was hilarious and like a really great subversion. Like, you don't see the superheroes do this part. So that was cool. But apparently Cage wasn't the first choice to play Big Daddy, actually. Apparently Brad Pitt was actually going to play him at one point.
What?
Which is why, I mean, this movie's produced by Plan B, which is Brad Pitt's production company. And I think he's been longtime friends with Matthew Vaughn, which is why he was going to be in it. Because, I mean, Matthew Vaughn used to work in Guy Ritchie movies, Brad Pitt was in Snatch, so it's, you know, all that. But he ended up dropping out because he did Inglourious Basterds instead. It was around that time. And then after that, Daniel Craig and Mark Wahlberg were also considered for Big Daddy. But I'm so glad Nicolas Cage got that role, because it's a perfect performance from Cage. Like, I don't think any of them would have done an Adam West impression, you know?
No, I agree that it takes that particular amount of crazy that Cage can just have, or just is, to pull off this role the way he does, especially in the big climactic torture scene, right? Or when Hit Girl comes to save them, and yes. He goes to 11, and he's like randomly shouting words.
Now switch to kryptonite.
That's the one.
It's so good. That's something that me and my friends would shout at each other when, because we loved Cage so much, and it was so perfect. Take cover, child.
It's like somebody, the director, like Matthew Vaughn, just told him, okay, but you're on fire, and he was just like, say no more, I got it. what he went with.
Well, of course, Mike, Nicolas Cage has experience playing a superhero on fire, because he was Ghost Rider.
Oh my god. You're not wrong.
Yeah, so, I mean, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Cage play so far? Obviously, the Ghost Rider connection, this is based on a comic book superhero. But is there anything else that came to mind?
I think it's funny that, or it's sad, rather, that he was in two superhero movies that just missed.
Ghost Rider, again, just kind of hit right before the big superhero boom. Kick-Ass, right around that time. You know, this was 2010, which is a pretty weak year for superhero movies. I think Iron Man 2 was the only one that came out. Or actually, DC came out with Jonah Hex that same year, too. So, yeah, pretty weak year. Ooh.
I think Kick-Ass might have come out too early for the skewering of superhero movies.
Yes.
Because it was, like, just the gearing up. If it had come out in, you know, 2012, 2013, somewhere like that, it might have been a bigger thing. But as far as other Cage movies, you know, I'm not sure. Mike, what do you got for me?
Well, I just have one other one outside of Ghost Rider. I felt like the dynamic between Cage and Moretz really reminded me of the dynamic he had with Alison Lohman and Matchstick Men, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's a similar thing there. It's the, you know, father and daughter relationship, and he's kind of teaching her the trade, like how to do these things. And in that movie, he's a con man, and in this movie, he's a superhero. So I like that. It sort of feels like the continuation of that in some way.
I do think it's really funny that clearly Hit Girl and Big Daddy were going on before Kick-Ass starts, like within the movie, like within the plot of the movie.
Right.
And I just like that image, like that idea that there are these other people that are trying to be superheroes besides Kick-Ass. Because, like, it's kind of presented in the way that he's the one that inspires people to take this up, like start this wave of vigilante justice.
Right. Well, he's the first one that goes viral, right? That's the thing.
Right.
On MySpace.
Oh my god, I forgot about that part.
There's so much MySpace in this movie, it's insane.
The whole movie is based, hinges on MySpace.
Yeah, which is nuts. I mean, this was 2010. MySpace had to have been dying down at that point, right? Like, there was no... Right?
Well, maybe. I did see it's just a sort of unrelated meme. I saw that was like, hey, Dad, how long have the Marvel movies been going on? And it's the it was a frame from Iron Man 1 where he posted.
Yeah, I don't want to see this on my MySpace page. That quote.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, MySpace did exist. That was 2008, though. So that was like around the time Facebook like first started. I view MySpace as like before and after Facebook kind of thing. Like Facebook really destroyed it. And I feel like in 2010, Facebook was already really popular. And already taking down MySpace in a big way. So I was surprised at how much MySpace was in this movie, looking back on it.
They probably blew a lot of their money, MySpace, I mean, to get this product placement.
True. There's also a lot of YouTube in this movie, too. But YouTube's still around, so there's that. Let's talk about the moments or scenes that stood out to you in this movie, Mike. And I think the obvious one is the first time you see Hit Girl in action, which is just still fucking... Like, it's still, I think, the scene of the movie. It's fucking awesome. The way that happens, where Kick-Ass is about to die. He's like, about to get his ass kicked. They should call him Ass Kick. this is one of my favorite lines in the movie, where Cage is like, they should call him Ass Kick. and Minnie's like, that doesn't even make any sense. So Kick-Ass is at Razul's house, and Razul and his men are about to like just beat the shit out of him and probably kill him. I think it's Razul who's like walking up to him with like a knife or something. And then you just see like a blade just sliced through his stomach. And then he falls to his knees, and you see nothing behind him. And then he falls to the ground, and it's this 11-year-old girl.
With the, like, weird staff sword.
Yeah, with the staff sword and the purple hair and the costume, and it's Hit Girl, and it's amazing. And her line, where it's just, I'm gonna say a naughty word, if that's okay, Mike.
Oh, man, you know, okay, let me do earmuffs. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just, all right, you cunts, let's see what you can do now. Amazing. It's hardcore.
It's so good.
Okay, you cunts. Let's see what you can do now. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Badass. It is the scene from the comic that convinced Matthew Vaughn this was worth making. And it's the scene that made studios nervous the most. They did not want an 11-year-old girl saying the C word and then destroying a bunch of dudes very violently.
Yeah.
And I remember even like as the movie's coming out, like it was a really controversial movie, which added to my desire to see it really. Like,
because you're a 16-year-old edgelord and you're like, I gotta see this movie.
Exactly, man. Fuck authority and all that. and that doesn't even, you know, cover the fact that action scene is fantastic. Everything in the scene is like, it's so well shot and so well paced. The Banana Splits theme song cover that's playing over it. It's such a great cover. Cause I don't know if you know, I had a, there was a CD that came out in the mid 90s where a bunch of bands covered old TV theme songs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Sublime did Hong Kong Fui, by the way. It was great.
What?
But anyway, I forget what band it was, but they did a Banana Splits cover. So I knew the Banana Splits song really well at the time. And so that to have that like really fast punk rock cover of the Banana Splits theme song, like just added to that, like that mystique of the movie. Like I loved everything about that scene. It was so good.
Yeah. And I love the quick cuts back to Kick-Ass's just abject horror at what's going on in this incredible action scene.
Yep. It's so good. And I mean, I loved like everything about like I watching this again, like I was really impressed with Chloe Moretz back then. Watching it again, I was like, she is 11 years old and like she can do all like they just show her like doing knife tricks and stuff like that. Like they just like, let the camera linger on her while she's like, you know, flipping the knife around and stuff like that. And she's like 11. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Like that's
yeah, it's crazy. One of the other scenes that stuck out to me, well, like I said, the Big Daddy warehouse shootout, one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie, but the scene that stuck out to me as being like this is from the Kingsman is the Gatling gun jetpack scene at the very end.
Yeah, that absolutely felt like a Kingsman-esque scenario, which it doesn't really feel like it fits into the world that Kick-Ass is built for itself. Like at that point, we are firmly not in the real world anymore. Honestly, like once Hit Girl gets introduced, it's probably not the real world anyway.
I think that there's the interesting moment, right? The turn is when Kick-Ass gets hit by the car and he loses his ability to feel pain, right?
Right, but that happens really early on.
Yeah, but not in that sense. Like not in the sense of like this is when we enter the comic book world exactly, but. He makes the joke of, like, I don't have any, big, crazy origin story where he's like, I will avenge you over his mother's grave. But then he has a freak accident where he acquires an ability that helps him be a superhero, in that he can't feel pain, so he can keep fighting people. So
that's
true. Like, we're going to keep doing superhero stuff. And I like it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also really love that first fight that Kick-Ass gets in, where he just immediately gets stabbed. Like, yeah. Like within seconds.
So good.
It's pretty great. Another great subversion that this movie goes for. But really, everything I love about this movie can be pinned back to, like, the Cage and Moret scenes, because they're fantastic. I mean, the first time you meet the two of them, that bulletproof vest training scene, just the back and forth between the two of them, like, you can tell, like, they're a really loving family, like, father and daughter. But Cage is, like, you know, explaining to her, like, how fast bullets travel and all that, and you're like, what is going on, like, in this empty field?
Daddy, I'm scared.
Come on, Mindy, honey, be a big girl now. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Is it gonna hurt bad?
Oh, child. Only for a second, sugar. A handgun bullet travels at more than 700 miles an hour. So at close range like this, the force is gonna take you off your feet for sure, but it's really no more painful than a punch in the chest.
Why are you getting punched in the chest?
You're gonna be fine, baby doll. How was that? Not so bad. Kind of fun, huh? Now you know how it feels. You won't be scared when some junky asshole pulls a Glock.
I wouldn't have been scared anyways.
That's my girl. All right, up you get. Come on, two more rounds, and then home.
Again?
Uh-huh.
Look, only if we can go by the bowling alley on the way back.
The bowling alley?
Yeah, and ice cream after.
Huh. Okay. Two more rounds. No wincing, no whining, and you got yourself a deal, young lady.
Yeah. I'm gonna get a hot fudge sundae.
Good call, baby doll.
And then he's like, oh, don't worry, it just feels like getting punched in the chest. And he's like, I hate getting punched in the chest, but it feels like she's just kind of exasperated, not like she's, like, afraid or anything like that.
Yeah.
And, like,
and then that wide shot of him just shooting her in the puff of feathers out of her jacket.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. And he's like, the way that, like, they banter back and forth about how she's like, okay, we're going to the bowling alley after this though, right? And it's like, okay, two more shots, no whining, no complaining, we'll go to the bowling alley. It's like, I'm gonna get ice cream after. All right, I'm gonna get ice cream sundae. Good call, baby doll. Shoots her. It's great, so good. But I also really like, you mentioned the Cage action scene in the warehouse. It's a great scene. Mm-hmm. And watching it now, it plays like, I wrote down, it's Zack Snyder's wet dream of a Batman movie. Like,
oh my god!
Like, this is what Zack Snyder really wanted to make when he was making Batman.
That was the Snyderverse. Just Batman murdering everybody.
Yeah, just throwing grenades everywhere, setting the building on fire, doesn't get fuck. That's, like, that's the Batman movie Zack Snyder wanted to make.
Yeah, you're right.
But also, I really love the comic flashback that shows Cage and Mindy's backstory. So in the movie, like, Cage's character is drawing, like, a comic, and it shows, like, how, like, you know, Cage's, like, or like their origins, basically. Like, Cage was a cop that got framed by the mob and stuff like that. And that comic's actually drawn by John Romita Jr., who drew the original comic. He was the artist for that.
Oh, that's cool.
Something that's a cool detail there. Although the backstory in this movie differs from the backstory in the original comic, but I think this is better. In the original comic, it starts out that way, where you think he was a former cop, but it turns out he actually quit the force because he was just so obsessed with superheroes that that he just wanted to indulge himself in that and be a superhero and train his daughter to be a superhero. And in this movie, like, it's still fucked up that he's doing this.
Yeah.
And, like, they call him on that. Like, his partner comes by, Marcus, and he's like, you can't be doing this, and that kind of thing. But I think the fact that they give him, like, some kind of motivation and some backstory for what he's doing, I think makes that character a lot more sympathetic and interesting. Also, I also want to throw out there in one of those sequences, I think when Cage is drawing the comic, Mindy is, like, talking to him, like, giving me some, like, trivia questions about, like, these different things. And he's giving her, like, questions about guns or whatever. And then his last question is, what is the name of John Woo's first feature film?
Yeah.
Which I thought was great, because Cage has worked with John Woo a couple of times. He was in Face Off, and he was in Windtalkers. So I was like, yeah, that's a neat little shout-out, sort of. That was cool. But yeah, otherwise, any other scenes that stand out to you, Mike? I mean, the first fight scene, the Kick-Ass wins, I like a lot, too. Where he's running through this, like, he's trying to get a cat off of a billboard. And it's like, fuck you, Mr. Bitey! And then falls down.
Yeah.
And when he does so, he, like, breaks this guy's stride, and like these three guys are trying to attack him, and he like ends up being able to take the beating. And like I think one of my favorite moments in the movie is when a guy like runs into the restaurant and is like, "There's a guy dressed as a superhero out there fighting a bunch of guys," and it's like a pause and everybody's just kind of staring at him. He's like, "It's fucking awesome!" Yeah. He runs outside.
Yeah, I did like that whole, you know, we keep cutting to them chasing this dude, and then he's Kick-Ass trying to save a kitten.
Yes.
And he falls. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, this movie has, like, very sudden bursts of violence that are used for comedic effect that I like a lot. And there's a lot of funny stuff there. Also, I just want to give a shout out to Kick-Ass Red Mist jamming out to Crazy by Gnarls Barkley, because that's, like, a fun little scene.
Yeah. Also, super dates this movie. But that was a great scene.
Yeah, I really love that song, and like that, just that bit where they're just like Kick-Ass, like they're so awkward about it. Like that's the thing. Like Kick-Ass has just met Red Mist, and Kick-Ass is like trying to be cool, and he's like, "Oh yeah, you want to be my sidekick? Like that's cool." And he's kind of like bumping his head, and they're like, "Baby, I'm crazy,"
and they slowly get really into it.
Yeah. Then it ends with like Red Mist shouting like, "Oh fuck!" and like runs out because the building's on fire.
Oh man, shoot, that guy McLovin is pretty great at this movie, actually.
Yeah, he's good, and you know, I think you know McLovin will haunt him for his entire career. I think, but he's generally pretty good in stuff. I mean, he was in Role Models, and he was funny in that movie. I think he was in the Neighbors movies also, along with Chloe Moretz as one of the frat guys, and you know, he was pretty funny in those. He had a funny cameo in This Is the End, where Michael Cera blows cocaine in his face. It's great.
Oh my god. I forgot about that. Does this smell like cocaine to you?
But yeah, now I remember he was pretty funny in this movie. He's a solid antagonist because he is very much just Kick-Ass, right? He's just this like loser kid who's just really into comic books that wants to like play pretend almost. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he is, I'm pretty sure, the main bad guy of Kick-Ass 2. I think he dies at the end of Kick-Ass 2, but then in the post-credit scene, it's revealed that he's alive. And then they never had to follow up on that, I guess, because there's no Kick-Ass 3. But yeah, I barely remember anything about Kick-Ass 2. I feel like it did not handle Red Mist that well in that movie.
And as someone who had a Red Mist poster on their wall, that must have really hurt you.
Oh man, it was hurtful, man. It was a gigantic poster. It was a huge. It was like my friend worked at the movie theater and he stole it for me. And like,
oh my so god,
it was a movie theater sized poster just hanging on my wall of Red Mist. It was pretty great. I was the coolest kid in class, Mike.
Clearly.
I also really love the running gag with the bazooka in this movie, and that's a really funny bit because everybody's just so incredulous about the bazooka. Like, like when the guy first takes it, it's like, "Really? Like you're taking the bazooka?" And he comes in and is like, "Don't worry, boss, I got this handled." And he comes out with the bazooka, and like Red Mist is like, "Are you you got this handled? What are you doing with the fucking bazooka?" That's great.
And then I think my favorite joke is after the Gatling guns finish firing, Mark Strong's like, "Oh, that was a weird sounding bazooka."
Yes.
It's so dumb.
Yeah, and also all that stuff has a lot more great hit girl action. I mean, she pretends to be a schoolgirl and like annihilates the dudes in the lobby, which was a lot of fun. And then there's the Bad Reputation scene, which is great. It's a great song, hit girl kicking ass. Honestly, this should be a hit girl movie. Like, Kick-Ass is like ancillary to everything that's good about this movie.
Well, they just relaunched the comic books, and there's a hit girl comic, I think, now.
There was a hit girl. I remember there in the comics. I haven't followed it in a little while, but I remember there was the Kick-Ass comic before this movie came out, and then they did a Kick-Ass 2, which is like another 8 issues. And then there was definitely a Hit Girl solo comic, but after that, I don't know what happened. Well, the Hit Girl solo comic was around the time Kick-Ass 2 came out, the movie.
No, but I think like right now they just relaunched it. Yeah, there's a new Kick-Ass, and I think there might be a new Hit Girl comic right now.
I know it.
That's in the present.
No, that's cool. But yeah, they should do something with that. Like make a Hit Girl movie. I mean, at this point, like part of the appeal of Hit Girl is that she's 11 years old and Chloe Moretz isn't anymore. And so I don't know how it would work necessarily. I mean, like, I'm sure a Hit Girl movie would still be, like, I would love to see a superhero movie with Chloe Moretz kicking ass. You know, that would be great. But, you know, I'm not sure if it's going to have the same impact as it did when she was this unknown 11-year-old actress just annihilating people left and right. She's amazing in this movie. She's really funny, and she's really, really charming. And again, her relationship with Cage is, like, the heart of this movie. They're so good together. And it's honestly, like, a real shame that Cage couldn't be in Kick-Ass 2, you know, because his character was dead.
Because they burned him alive.
because they burned him alive. But his final scene with Hit Girl, that like deathbed kind of scene where Cage is like completely burned alive, and he's just like saying, like you'll be okay, child, and like all that, like he's great. He's so good.
For what this movie's doing, yeah, right.
It's like super ridiculous, super crazy, but like it hits the emotional beats I feel like it needs to hit in order to justify the end of this movie.
I'm so proud of you, Gaby Troll. Are you okay?
Getting shot, Daddy, hurt a lot more than when you did it.
That's because I use the velocity rounds, child.
You're the kindest daddy in the whole world.
No, I just... I love you.
What did you think of the voiceover and stuff like in the beginning, kind of the establishment of setting up who Kick-Ass was and stuff like that? It seemed to me like a very deliberate reference to Sam Raimi's Spider-Man movies. Watching this time around,
yes, you know, I probably didn't make that exact connection, but it felt like it was very in line with this being a comic book spoof kind of satire, because that's how every comic book starts. We get the little, you know, the little orange text box, whatever that's actually called in comic books, where the guy talks to the audience, and we're going to, you know, break the fourth wall and set stuff up. Specifically, the moment, I think it's towards the end in that final scene with the being tortured, when he's like, you're telling yourself that I must get through this because I'm talking to you right now. Well, stop being such a smartass kind of thing.
Yeah. Like, have you ever seen Sin City or American Beauty or that kind of thing? Like.
Yeah. Yeah. It also just made me think of a comic I've been reading recently where that happens, where the protagonist is like, okay, I know I've shown you this already. And it's just it's the first issue again. It's the same thing. It's really weird.
Yeah. And this movie has a lot of that going on. That it actually shows you like the orange text boxes. It's like meanwhile and stuff like that. Like it has like that throughout. Like it has like these comic booky transitions, which I think is pretty cool. And yeah, it does reference a lot of other comic stuff. I mean, like the first thing you hear about Cage is the mobsters kind of trying to take out this one, interrogating this one guy, and be like, so you want me to believe that Batman attacked you in a warehouse and that kind of thing? I'm like, I didn't say Batman! And that kind of thing. But also, I really love Kick-Ass's line towards the end, actually, where he's like, with no power comes no responsibility.
Yeah.
Except that wasn't true. And it was a cool reference to the famous Spider-Man line, but kind of this movie's like spin on it, which, you know, I liked it. And yeah, there's a lot of that going on in this movie. Like, if you love comics, I think Kick-Ass is definitely one to check out because it is so entrenched comic book culture, which I like very much. As far as it taking place in New York goes, like, no, it just doesn't look like New York. You know what I mean? Like, but it doesn't. It was filmed in Toronto, I'm pretty sure, and like it looks like it. You know,
I'm even going to give it credit to say that that's even a spoof of comic books, because so many comic books take place in New York, but never look anything like New York does.
True. Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay, we can go with that.
Yeah, I'll give it credit. Why not?
Yeah. What'd you think of Clark Duke and Evan Peters in this movie, Mike? They're fun.
Mostly, it was like that's the guy from American Horror Story. That was all. I mean, they're funny. Like, I like their characters, like their interactions with Kick-Ass and Dave, whatever his real name is.
They have a pretty easy chemistry between the three of them, and that makes that group of friends pretty likable, even when they're, like, occasionally saying some homophobic and shitty stuff.
Like encouraging him to pretend to be gay. Like, that's real weird.
Yeah. Well, no, I think they were discouraging him from doing that, right? Like, Clark Duke was saying, like, this is going to blow up in your face. Like, like you got to tell her at some point.
Yes, but before that, there's the scene when they're in the comic shop and they're getting their coffee Katie says something about, makes like a reference about him being gay, and he looks over to his friends and they both give him like the, yeah, do it, like, yes, agree to it, like,
okay,
thumbs up.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Actually, that does result in one really funny line, though, with Evan Peters, where it's like, he's like, yeah, maybe this will get you laid, dude. And Clark Duke's like, no, not if she thinks he's gay, dipshit. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, again, that whole aspect of the movie with Dave and Katie just does not work for me at all.
No.
At all. Like, in hindsight. Like, I think I thought it was fine when I was 16.
When you're a dumb 16-year-old, this is, like, the funniest thing ever.
Yeah, but now looking back on it, it does not hold up so much, which is a bummer. But are there any other scenes or anything you want to talk about, Mike, or should we move on to Netflix reviews?
I just want to give a shout out to Mark Strong's accent, just because I love Mark Strong, and he's doing like the most over the top comic book or most over the top like New York gangster villain voice, and it's great.
Yes, yeah, he's very solid in this movie. I think he got a better role in the Kingsman movies, I think, where he gets to do his British accent and gets to kind of play around in the James Bond sandbox, and he gets an amazing scene in Kingsman 2 as well, which I know you know which one I'm talking about.
Just take me home, mountain road.
Country roads.
Yeah. Country road, yeah.
But yeah, all right. So I think we've talked about Kick-Ass for quite a bit, I think, at this point. We're still fans, and I'm glad that I was still a fan. I was a little worried about it, but I'm glad that I was still able to watch this movie and really enjoy a lot of it, even if I don't like some aspects of it as much as I used to back in the day. And now let's do Netflix reviews for Kick-Ass, Mike. Here's a 5-star review for Kick-Ass. This is actually from Letterboxd. What defines a masterpiece? For some, a masterpiece is something like Citizen Kane or The Godfather, or any of those types of movies. But if you ask me what defines a masterpiece, I'd answer with movies like Pulp Fiction, American Beauty, Moonrise Kingdom, and of all things, Kick-Ass. So why do I consider this movie a masterpiece? Well, it's simple. It has everything a masterpiece needs. Nick Cage is a Batman knockoff. A teen in a stupid outfit getting his ass handed to him by some street thugs. A scene where a guy explodes in a nuclear microwave.
Oh my god, how can we forget about the microwave?
Yeah, that's a great scene. Scenes of guys getting shot by a little girl in a hallway. A fucking jetpack with miniguns on it. What else can you say to a movie that has all of that? Well, how about the fact that the writing is solid for the most part, the direction is great, the story has characters that actually develop, and again, Nick Cage. What more do you really need?
Yeah.
That microwave scene. Good shit. Good stuff.
I love how it's just on accident. They're like, yeah, just, I don't know, just turn it on.
Yeah, they kind of just they watch it happen after like 10 seconds, and they're just kind of like nonplussed. Like, oh, yeah. Man, oops.
We got to clean that up, man.
Here's a 1-star review of Kick-Ass. Filth, garbage, junk, trash, 12-year-old girl killing people and cussing like a life without parole inmate. No meaning. No meaning to anything but a tribute to violence and pure, filthy nonsense. The sad part is, I know Clark Duke. I knew his grandfather very well. We were good friends at one time. But this crap Clark, please.
It's an impassioned plea.
Yeah, from Clark Duke's elderly friend, I guess.
So. Oh, man, what did we... Oh, man, I can't remember what we named this character that shows up all the time. Oh, thanks for tuning in.
Virginiers, I believe, is her name.
Yeah, right? Temperance Virginiers. That was it. There we go.
Yes. Here's a 2-star review of Kick-Ass. Spoilers. Wow, I did not expect that at all. I thought it was going to be a kid's movie. Boy, was I wrong.
Oh, no.
Don't get it confused. This movie is violent. Unnecessarily violent. All the killing scenes are scary because so many of them are bloody shots with a gun to the head with a nice blood splatter. I thought it was going to be a cutesy kids superhero type movie, and it is not. It wrapped up the concept nicely like some popcorn tongue-in-cheek kids cartoon, and then it hits you with all this violent gunfighting and torture. And still tries to be all cutesy and ha-ha about it, thinking that's the cool thing to do, and it's just sad. Sad to think that little kids are watching us watch this type of crap, thinking that they're supposed to laugh because some adults are laughing at the movie, and now they're getting brainwashed watching this junk, and they'll have a warped sense of the world, and they'll end up carrying on making twisted movies like this. Not for consumption for the young kids. Beware. You need to be at least high school age to watch this movie, and it's still wrong for those young adults to watch this sort of thing and laugh at it. This is one film I just could not agree on.
So luckily, there's a ratings board.
Right. But if her kids were like me, the ratings board meant nothing, Mike.
Yes. Well, I just meant for that person's personal edification.
Oh, yeah. They should have known that it was rated R.
Yeah.
Because the R rating exists. Anyway, here's a 3-star review of Kick-Ass. A stylized, high-octane, cinematic equivalent of a bright pink speedboat mounted to a rocket launcher. With a lighthearted teenage rom-com playing out while everything is on fire and explosions are covering up the plot holes. You could do worse, but you probably deserve better.
That's a pretty good... I like that one.
You could do worse, but you probably deserve better. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what we have Super for. That's why Super exists.
Exactly.
Here's a 2-star review. This is just one sentence. Nick Cage, referring to his daughter as child, is the most Nick Cage thing. And I think there's something special in that.
Holy shit.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that, but yeah, he does call her child.
A lot.
That's what he called. Like, I don't think he ever uses her real name. It's just child.
Yeah.
And finally, I got one more. Here's a 1-star review of Kick-Ass. This could have been a 5-star movie, but I was just shocked at seeing a very young child actor do and say things that is simply not appropriate. It's just weird to see her act in an R-rated way when she wouldn't even be allowed to watch the very movie she acted in. Particularly because of her very own scenes. There is that troubling mix of humor and shocking gore that made Tarantino's Pulp Fiction morbidly popular. This movie is R-rated for a very good reason. Yeah, I mean, again, I think Temperance Virgin Ears wrote a second review, is what happened there. Yeah. Although Chloe Moretz, like, leading up to this movie, like, in interviews and stuff, in the press, like, she would actually say, like, she wasn't allowed to say the words she says in this movie, like, outside of the film. Yeah. And even in press, like, she wouldn't, like, doing interviews and stuff, she wouldn't call the movie Kick-Ass, she would call Kick-Butt, because she was 11 years old. And
oh, my God, that's amazing.
which makes her performance that much better, because it seems so natural coming out of her when she calls people the C-word. It's great. I think that about wraps up our discussion on Kick-Ass, Mike. Still big fans after all these years, and I'm happy about that. Where can we find you online this week?
You could find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter.
And you can find me online at Twitter at MSmithFilmBlog.
Sorry.
Recently, Mike chewed me out on... after a podcast, because we've been saying twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and mdfilmblog, which I guess is a very old school way of telling people to follow us on Twitter.
Well, you know, if you're looking to jump off MySpace to a new website, come on over to twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
So, yeah. So now Mike just threw me off my game. He's MD Film Blog. I'm M. Smith Film Blog. Thank you for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike's Crease Show. Listen to the review via our podcast on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, take a moment to give us a review. You can support this podcast and Filmbook. Take part in our Patreon campaign. Find the campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Now, any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast, your email, about the title of your email, because we appreciate so many different hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in one week, actually, for a new episode of Complete Works, where we're talking The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which I actually have not seen. And I'm kind of looking forward to. It's a John Turteltaub movie, director of National Treasure, National Treasure 2.
All right.
So, you know, see what happens. I've heard mixed things, but, you know, it's a new Cage movie, Mike. It's a new adventure that we could go on together.
I'm down for a fantasy romp with our old friend Nick Cage.
Yes, and Jay Baruchel's star in that movie, too, which is... going to be super weird, I think. Plus, you can keep an eye out for Film Bookcast in 2 weeks, where, ironically, after our discussion of Kick-Ass, we're talking Deadpool 2.
Yeah, it's finally here.
Yeah, so I'm very much looking forward to Deadpool 2, the movie that succeeded where Kick-Ass failed in terms of box office. Thank you so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.